Greetings, friends. I hope that you're all keeping well in this time, especially with this new wave hitting us and all the uncertainty that that brings and the economic difficulties for so many people. At the moment, we are looking at a series called Inner Freedom. And today is going to be the second talk on inner freedom within the shape of our lives. But just to recap on what we looked at in talk one, where we looked at freedom with our minds, where we first looked at how our typical way of knowing tends to be quite negative, constricted, self-referential, and shaped by our difficult experiences more than the positive ones. And also that we cannot think our way out of this way of knowing. But we looked at how two of the exit signs from this movie theater of the mind that we get trapped in, two of these exit signs are presence, where we choose to be in the moment, knowing what we're doing while we're doing it, and awareness, starting to recognize the ways in which our minds can keep us trapped in stories and identities that imprison us into patterns of defensive, fearful, or self-promoting behavior. And something I've realized as I've been working with awareness of my thoughts is how much I've allowed the current story of who I am or what is happening to me to take over my whole life, running roughshod over everything, dominating my thoughts, invading my sleep, and driving my emotions and my sense of identity. And this has left me in a very narrow, oppressive space many, many times. And I'm sure that you can identify with this kind of experience. And at first, it feels almost impossible to let these very dominant storylines go. But with practice, we begin to recognize them earlier. They start to feel lighter. We're more able to find the space outside of them. As we wake up from the small knowing of our minds, we start to become aware of a much more vast, spacious inner landscape, where we experience the freedom of living lightly with our thoughts, the story they tell us about ourselves, and where we touch on an unconditioned part of ourselves that has never been damaged or wounded, that is utterly free, unshakably held and rooted in God. This week, I want to look at the possibility of finding inner freedom within the shape of our lives as they are. And this quote by Mirabai Starr captures the theme in a nutshell. It is by showing up for the full encounter with reality that we discover our hidden wholeness, which was, of course, present all along. Our hidden wholeness. I have a memory from childhood when I was about 6 or 7 years old of having that thrill of joy, you know, where you feel that life is good, that everything is fitting into place perfectly. And I remember belting out the song at the top of my happy little lungs, "Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way." And of course, much to my disappointment, this beautiful feeling didn't last. And sadly, things didn't keep going my way, or maybe happily in the long run, but anyway. But that's a strong wish of ours and an expectation that we unconsciously carry around with us. Somehow in our Western psyche, we've developed a mindset that life should go well, that if we plan correctly and live good lives, things should run smoothly and pan out more or less in the way we want them to, or according to the sort of formula that we've been told our lives should follow. Things should go our way. And when they do, we're convinced that we've found the correct formula for life. And from childhood, we've kind of been sold this happily ever after myth. And our religious training has reinforced this very powerfully. If you do good, then God will bless you. If you discover the will of God and live obediently, then everything will fall into place like a well-oiled machine. That is a strong expectation that many of us grew up with. What I find strange about us humans is that as we live into the reality of life, all evidence from this lived experience is to the contrary. Yet we still hold these fictitious expectations somewhere. How earned and slow we are. So when something goes wrong, we do ask ourselves questions like, where did we go wrong? Or what did we do to anger God, disappoint God? When did we step outside of God's will? Or, you know, the old question, why me? But I've begun to realize that these expectations we have of life are really rather primitive, because life does not go smoothly. No matter how good we are or how carefully we plan and try to foresee all possible outcomes and make contingency plans, life has a way of throwing surprises in our way. Life just doesn't go as we expect it to. That is life as it is. And Eckhart Tolle says that he can sum up the plot of every movie that has ever been made in three words: something goes wrong. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a story. But he said that's because that's a really good summary of life. Something goes wrong. And this acknowledgement of life as it is calls us to a different response. Rather than blaming or self-shaming, knowing that pain, suffering, frustration, and disappointment are a given is actually quite a helpful thing, to acknowledge this to ourselves. This is how it is. And so how do we respond to this suchness, this isness of life and its mess and curveballs and unexpected twists and turns? And Cynthia Bourgeau says that there are two ways to respond to the surprises and unexpected turns of life. One can either be in a state of brace, where you resist what is happening, bracing yourself against it, or you can yield, letting go of your expectations, opening to what is. And along with that, we have to make the choice to let go of our frustrations and perceived rights and ease into the isness of the moment. And this, she says, is surrender. And she describes it in this way. The word surrender itself means to hand oneself over or entrust oneself. It is not about outer capitulation, but about inner opening. It is always voluntary, and rather than an act of weakness, it is always an act of strength, because it opens the heart more directly to the more subtle realms of spiritual wisdom and energy. She goes on to say, when the attitude of prompt surrender has become permanently ingrained in a person while still in bodily life, that person becomes a powerful servant of humanity, whose very being radiates blessing and spiritual strength. Lived in this way, with this attitude of open surrender, life with all of its unpredictability becomes a continual open invitation to surrender. It is a more adventurous way of living because it is more open-ended, loaded with surprises around the next corner. We are in fact acknowledging that we do not know and cannot control what is going to happen next, and we are entrusting ourselves to God, God of the real, not God of the fantasy of how we think life should be, who God should be. On the other hand, whenever we resist what is, spiritual teachers from many traditions say that this is actually one of the leading causes of suffering. We have all sorts of lists of conditions for our happiness, that we will one day be happy if we look a certain way, or own that car or house, or have a better job, or if our partner learns to be the way we want them to be, or if our neighbor stops doing that irritating thing, or if we attain spiritual perfection, or whatever our goals happen to be. And our minds give us all sorts of formulae, which we're convinced will lead to happy lives, formulae such as career success, health, wealth, security. Thomas Keating calls these our programs for happiness, which he says mainly center around three primary needs: our need for security, our need for approval, and our need to be in control. And so we go about trying to alter reality to fit our programs for happiness, or our script of how life should unfold. But this is doomed to failure because reality has a way of being beautifully messy, contradictory, unpredictable, gritty, and real. James Finlay has an amazing thing that he teaches. He says that if there were zero variance between our conditions for happiness and what actually is happening right now, we would be perfectly peaceful and contented and would no longer suffer. Quite a statement to make. In other words, what that is saying is if our expectations of what life should be like for us to be happy right now, if those expectations were exactly aligned with what is actually happening right now, we'd stop suffering. Our suffering is caused by our resistance to the things that we think do not fit with our expectation of what a perfect moment would look like, by anything that threatens the hard boundaries that we've created around our sense of self, such as when somebody says something that offends my identity as the teacher or the spiritual person or the likable person. That I resist that, and that threatens my boundaries of who I think I am, how I want to project myself into the world. But why does this practice of surrender open the heart more directly to the more subtle realms of spiritual wisdom and energy, as Cynthia Bourgeau describes it? One reason is that the ego, by definition, resists reality, because its very existence is defined by hard boundaries, assertion of our will against what is, or against God's will, against the real. And you can literally feel this resistance in yourself at times. It's like a wall forming against the moment. And sometimes we feel a tightening, a constricting inside as this resistance comes up. And so what we're invited to do, the only thing we can, in fact, do, is to soften our resistance to what is happening, to open to the moment in receptivity, non-judgmentally. And this frees us from our ego assertion in that moment and opens us to the bigger space of wisdom knowing. And so living life in moment-by-moment surrender allows life to become an opportunity to practice what Richard Rohr describes as 1,000 letting goes. Each letting go is a gift to us because it's another dismantling of our over-involved ego, which clutches so hard to control, pride, and self-assertion. But the letting go of our hard outer boundaries also opens the possibility of exploring our inner landscape as we become present to whatever is happening, without and within. We become a little bit more free of the power of our ego as we do this. And so life becomes a wonderful range of opportunities for spiritual growth and inner transformation. The ego is by definition a constricted and insecure place to live in. And so every time we practice this letting go, we're softening the prison walls of the ego and venturing into the wonderful way that Romans 5 verse 1 in the Message version describes it, the wide open spaces of God's grace and freedom. And so this attitude of surrender or yieldedness is closely related to inner freedom. Our tendency to clutch onto our possessions or our expectations and plans is actually a form of being trapped by them. We believe that our happiness and sense of okayness depends on things working out a certain way. And this leaves us in a very narrow, squished up space. It leaves very little room for alternatives or adventurousness. So we become imprisoned by our expectations. There's a really interesting story by some people who have run expensive lodge. And so they've had some very high-end wealthy people coming to stay at the lodge. And one of these very wealthy people one day was absolutely throwing his toys out of the cot, making himself incredibly unhappy, as well as all of the people around him, because this fancy lodge had various forms of bottled water, but they didn't have his favorite type. Talk about creating your own misery and spreading misery around you by not being able to be open to whatever is. And there was plenty available for him. But that's the kind of unhappiness that we can start getting caught up in. That's an extreme example. But unless one learns to soften and open and receive the moment as it is, this kind of walled resistance starts becoming the place that we live in. But by yielding, on the other hand, we begin to discover an enormous space outside of our narrow expectations and plans. We discover the expansiveness and spaciousness of God and of life. It becomes possible to find peace in the midst of chaos when we let go of our knee-jerk responses of anger, of my rights, of frustration and disappointment. We also start to recognize beauty and opportunities that we didn't see in our angry, resistant state. For example, one day I had a burst tire, and normally I would feel a lot of resistance about that and frustration. Why me? Why did this happen right now? But I'd been working with this whole practice of surrender. And it's amazing the shift that can happen when one does choose to be present to the moment and to start looking at the natural beauty around you by the side of the road and receive the kind of warm human gestures of assistance that come. And so it opens up a whole new world of opportunities. The same with being caught in a long queue. Instead of that usual kind of inner resistance and blowing your fuse inside, notice the humanity around you and connect with others with you. And it's a wonderful opportunity of shared experiences of being together. This response of surrender does not mean passivity or turning a blind eye to injustice. This is really important to reflect on. Rather, it's an inner response of unconditional receptivity to the moment, whatever it is, that then opens us to the larger knowing, or the metanoia that we looked at in talk one. Our typical dualistic mind is continually judging the moment, dividing it into good and bad, what belongs and what doesn't belong, what's desirable and what's undesirable. And along with this, we so easily get caught up in loops of outrage, which can churn over and over, leaving us feeling self-righteous and embittered at the same time. And we carry this bitterness with us, tainting the atmosphere as we go. And here I speak from experience as someone who so easily gets stuck in these outrage loops. Any action that comes from this dualistic place is born out of friction and ego and will therefore add to the friction and violence that is in the world. If we instead let go of our judgment of the moment and open to the raw, unvarnished real of what just is, we are moving into the unconditioned space in us that is frictionless and free from ego grasping. Action that emerges from this place is just by nature more wise and compassionate, because it's starting to touch on resonance with the heart of God. And so from this space, we're able to hold a fuller landscape in a more spacious heart. And so action that comes from this place in us is likely to have more long-lasting impact. It won't add to the divisions or violence of the world, because it comes from an unprejudiced knowing, from a place that's free from ego agendas. It comes from an undivided heart, held in the expansive heart of God. And so this attitude of welcoming and surrender does lead to wise action, and we will be exploring that a bit further in the fourth talk. This attitude is encapsulated in that absolutely profound serenity prayer. God, grant me the courage to change the things I can change. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Grant me the wisdom to know the difference. And this wisdom emerges from the open receptive space of non-judgment. This is not always an easy movement to make from our small ego-driven wills to an open receptivity to the moment. Believe me, I know. Because it does involve letting go of our juicy pride, that sense of I know what's right, the deep conviction that we know what should be happening in the moment. But when we do this opening, we find that we've fallen into a much more spacious, free, humble, and peaceful space. Every time we do this, we're discovering more of our true selves, which tend to be hidden and overruled by the ego self. Every letting go is an opportunity for the real self to emerge, and this self is utterly free. The sense that I've been having is that there's a whole different dimension to life that we can start to open to, a depth dimension that is not constricted by circumstances. An image that I've been finding really helpful as an analogy of this additional depth dimension. It's one of being in the sea with wild waves breaking over me. It can feel absolutely overwhelming if one stays at the surface level of the waves. But one can always dive deeper beneath the waves. The deeper you go below the crashing surface of the water, the more peaceful and quiet it becomes. And the waves lose their threat. And that's the depth that we can start to discover within and open to the depths of God within us. This new depth dimension offers a whole new sense of freedom, the freedom to dive deeper into this inner journey, into God, into this spacious, quiet, and peaceful place within ourselves that's always there, where we know that we are held, loved, and ultimately secure, and through this where we find the freedom of deep contentment and well-being, no matter what the surface restrictions of our lives are. But it does involve a conscious letting go of our habitual patterns of reaction and resistance, and that releases us into this free open space. Richard Rohr describes this as falling through your life circumstances into your life, your actual life, who you are in the depths of your being and in God is so much vaster than your life circumstances. So don't be trapped by them. Don't be fooled that they can bring you the contentment that you long for, the peace that we seek. It's already here and it's independent of circumstances. Something that it has taken me a long time to start appreciating is that this life, as it is the greatest teacher. If I let go of my attempts to glamorize or improve it, and rather open to it with this attitude of surrender and unconditional receptivity. And something that I've also been learning over the last few years is that God is continually tending our souls through everything that comes our way. Everything that life brings us is an opportunity for growth and has the power to transform us, particularly when we're out of control, when we stumble into moments of humiliation, when the experiences are difficult. And I recently heard a beautiful line that love is always working towards our total freedom. Our task is to open to the work of love, tending to us through the real. Joyce Rupp suggests that the difficult and painful parts of our lives are doorways to our spiritual growth. She writes, "We find ourselves grumbling when life does not give us all we want, or when the price of transformation costs us dearly. Failures, defeats, and disillusionments temporarily wipe out our hope of reaching the promised land of our true self, until we realize these very experiences are stepping stones to the wisdom we need." We want an easy ride there, but by definition we can't, because our egos are the veil that keep us from recognizing where and who we already are and that we're already held in God. And so failures, defeats, and disillusionments, they're necessary. She goes on to say that by choosing to recognize these experiences as the doorway and choosing to allow ourselves to enter through them, we'll move into the space beyond, which offers more freedom and takes us deeper into God and closer to our true selves. So often we miss the transformational potential of the moment because we're looking for sort of otherworldly, miraculous, spectacular interventions. And we miss God in the everyday aspects of our lives, right here, right up close, in what is real. We expect great flashes of wisdom and inspiration from God, magical writing on the wall. And God is coming to us all the time in the ordinary circumstances of our lives. Richard Rohr says it this way: God comes to you disguised as your life. We need to begin to open our eyes to the real, to stop resisting it or trying to reshape it in the way we think it should be, and to recognize every arising as God coming to us in fresh, adventurous, and unexpected ways, bring us wisdom and tools for our growth and transformation. I want to end with some quotes from Francis Bennett, who's a spiritual teacher and former Trappist monk. And he wrote, "This is the transforming miracle to which the symbol of the cross of Jesus points, that within every experience that on the surface seems to be clearly evil, bad, or at the very least undesirable, there's a hidden deeper good. That deeper good can reveal itself both interiorly or exteriorly when there is true self-surrender and acceptance of whatever is. When through self-surrender you are in a non-reactive relationship to whatever arises in the present moment, you transcend the labels of good and bad. You come to the realization that everything works together for good to those who love God." He goes on to say, "This is more than a superficial, passive milk and water acceptance of fate. It is a profoundly dynamic allowing, a deep acceptance. Ultimately, in loving what is, we are loving God Himself. We are loving our own true self." In our next talk, we will go on to look at how this applies to our inner emotional landscape, especially our more difficult and painful emotions. But as a way of ending this talk, I invite you to try an exercise that Cynthia Bourgeau suggests. Think of a typical scenario in your life where you feel strong inner resistance. And bring this scenario to mind, something that often brings you to that place of feeling like you're grating against what's happening, or outrage, those strong inner walls of resistance coming up, that sense of constriction that it brings to your body. It'll really allow that scenario to play out in your imagination so that you feel your reactions. And as you feel those reactions in your body, clench your fists tightly and constrict your muscles as a symbol of this inner clenching that is going on. So really let it be reflected in your whole body. Clench all your muscles. And now gradually, gently release your fists. And open your hands, relax your muscles, move your whole body into a gesture of receptivity and softening. Allow your inner clenchedness to soften at the same time as you release any sense of resistance. Allow your whole being to ease into this quiet, open, receptive attitude. Gently become aware of your breathing. And feel into the open space that you're now in.